Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver in Washington. Today on the show, Dory Gundy and I take you to Wyoming in the American West to visit a national park that defines the term dramatic landscape. You will also hear about what's trending today. Dan Friedel has a report from the world of professional golf. But in this story, it is a fan of that sport who stars in the game. And we will finish with another American story. Today, we hear the second and final part of The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky by Stephen Crane. But first, we hear a news story. Mario Ritter tells us about U.S. legal action against China in response to that country's ties with North Korea. Here is Mario Ritter.
The United States announced criminal charges and economic sanctions against four Chinese individuals and a Chinese company earlier this week. The U.S. government said it acted to punish them for suspected support of North Korea's nuclear weapons program. On Wednesday, a State Department official suggested that more Chinese companies and individuals could face investigation for suspected violations of sanctions on North Korea. The State Department's coordinator for sanctions policy, Daniel Freed, spoke to a Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee. He said, "It would also be useful if Chinese banks and companies understood that increasingly dealing with North Korean companies, especially those that are sanctioned, is going to be risky." 2 days earlier, the Treasury Department announced criminal charges and economic actions against a Chinese seller of industrial machinery. It named four top officials of Dandong Hongxiang Industrial Development Company Limited. The four include the company's chairwoman, Ma Xiaohong. They are accused of plotting to avoid sanctions against North Korea and using American financial businesses to hide the money they earned illegally. Chinese officials also are investigating the company. They are looking at its connection with the Kwangsun Banking Corporation, a North Korean bank. U.S. and United Nations officials have said the bank has provided financial services in support of North Korea's weapons programs. A State Department official said, "This shows we can work cooperatively with China. We both see it in our interests to apply greater pressure on North Korea." On Tuesday, a Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs official spoke to reporters about the U.S. action. Spokesman Geng Shuang said China was prepared to support UN resolutions against North Korea. The resolutions call for sanctions to punish the North for its nuclear and missile tests. However, the spokesman expressed opposition to other countries using their own laws against companies or people within China. "I want to stress that we oppose any country enacting so-called long-arm jurisdiction, using its own domestic laws against a Chinese entity or individual," he said. In March, China agreed to the strongest UN Security Council sanctions yet to limit trade with North Korea. The Council's members have approved other actions to punish the country for its nuclear activities and missile program. Those restrictions have largely halted North Korean trade with countries other than China. However, new research suggests that North Korean state-operated businesses are using middlemen in China to avoid sanctions. I'm Mario Ritter.
This is what's trending today. American David Johnson is now a hero to every sports lover who ever thought, I could do it better than the professional. Johnson was in the crowd as pro golfers warmed up for the Ryder Cup on Thursday in the American state of Minnesota. The Ryder Cup is a golf competition between teams of men from Europe and the United States. The event takes place every 2 years. It runs through Sunday. Johnson was watching the European players work on putting at the sixth hole of the Hazeltine National Golf Club. The players were Rory McIlroy, Andy Sullivan, Henrik Stenson, and Justin Rose. They are four of the best golfers in the world, and they were unable to hit the ball into the hole from about 4 meters away. They tried a number of times and continued to miss. From the crowd, Johnson shouted that he could make the putt, and the golfers asked him to come out and show them. One of the pro golfers even told Johnson that he would give him $100 if he made the putt. So Johnson, wearing blue jeans, a baseball cap, and a red jacket, took a putter and studied the green. As he prepared, another person said, "There's millions of people watching." Johnson took a short stroke, hit the ball, and it went right into the hole. Thousands of people cheered. Johnson pumped his arms, made a fist, and raised his hands into the air. The four pros all gave him a handshake. Johnson, a 30-year-old from North Dakota, became a star almost immediately. After the putt, he spoke with sports reporters for television stations and news agencies. McIlroy recorded the incident on his mobile phone and put the video on Twitter. One golf lover tweeted, "They ask him to try, and boom, go USA." And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
This week, on our National Park series, we travel to a dramatic western landscape in Wyoming. The area's huge mountains rise and rise and rise some more. Their jagged peaks shadow the beautiful valley of Jackson Hole. Rushing rivers wind their way through the land. Wild animals roam, and flowers, trees, and other plants thrive. Welcome to Grand Teton National Park.
Grand Teton sits 16 kilometers south of Yellowstone National Park. It is part of the Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem, one of the largest ecosystems in the world. Humans first came to the area more than 11,000 years ago. Native Americans hunted animals, gathered plants, and collected rocks for tools. To this day, Native groups consider the mountains sacred. In the early 1800s, the area was popular with fur trappers because of the many animals there. Around that time, French-Canadian fur trappers named the mountains the Grand Tetons. Some say this was because of the presence of Teton Indians in the area.
In 1862, the United States Congress passed the Homestead Act in order to settle the Western lands. The law permitted any current or future citizen to claim a plot of land for just $10. Many did. But the extreme weather and rocky soil of the Teton area made it difficult to raise crops and cattle. By the early 1900s, some homesteaders opened dude ranches. These were places where wealthy people could pay to experience the cowboy life. The cost included lodging, food, the use of a horse, and involvement in outdoor activities.
Millionaire businessman John D. Rockefeller toured the Grand Teton area in 1926. He fell in love with the mountain scenery. He bought land in and around the Jackson Hole Valley. A few years later, Congress created a small national park that protected the Teton Range and its lakes at the foot of the mountains. Later, around 1950, the small park and Rockefeller's land were combined to form the present-day Grand Teton National Park. Working ranches still exist in Jackson Hole today. The local economy, however, depends on tourism and wealthy homeowners.
Visitors almost anywhere in Grand Teton can look up and see beautiful pointed mountain peaks. The Teton Range is relatively young. At almost 4,200 meters high, Grand Teton is the tallest of the range. But all the mountains are pretty tall. 9 other Teton peaks reach higher than 3,600 meters. They rise suddenly along the western side of the valley. Forests blanket the mountainsides. Many lakes are found at the foot of the hills. The Snake River runs through Grand Teton National Park from north to south. The park has some of the oldest rocks of any U.S. national park. Some are as old as 12 million years.
Mormon Row is one of the most historic places in the park. The Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints, or Mormons, established the area in the late 1800s. The settlers moved into the area from nearby Idaho. They became farmers. They built water systems, which led to their great success in farming. On Mormon Row sits two picturesque barns. Homesteaders and brothers John and Thomas Alma Moulton built them in 1913. The barns sit in a field with a clear view of the Teton Range. Beyond the barns, there are many other historical homesteads to explore. Mormon Row leads to Antelope Flats. That is where we find the open grass and prairie lands of the Jackson Hole area. It is a perfect place to see wildlife such as antelope, elk, bison, moose, and coyote. Grand Teton National Park offers many activities, including hiking, swimming, skiing, and fishing. And it remains a place where visitors can go if they dream of a taste of the cowboy life.
From VOA Learning English, this is American Stories. Our story is called The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky. It was written by Stephen Crane. Today, we will hear the second and final part of the story.
"Don't know whether there'll be a fight or not," answered one man firmly. "But there'll be some shooting, some good shooting." The young man who had warned them waved his hand. "Oh, there'll be a fight fast enough if anyone wants it. Anybody can get in a fight out there in the street. There's a fight just waiting." The salesman seemed to be realizing the possibility of personal danger. "What did you say his name was?" he asked.
"Scratchy Wilson," voices answered together.
"And will he kill anybody? What are you going to do? Does this happen often? Can he break in that door?"
"No, he can't break in that door," replied the saloonkeeper. "He's tried it 3 times. But when he comes, you better lie down on the floor, stranger. He's sure to shoot at the door, and a bullet may come through."
After that, the salesman watched the door steadily. The time had not yet come for him to drop to the floor, but he carefully moved near the wall.
"Will he kill anybody?" he asked again.
The men laughed without humor at the question. "He's here to shoot, and he's here for trouble. I don't see any good in experimenting with him."
"But what do you do in a situation like this? What can you do?"
a man answered. "Well, he and Jack Potter..."
"But..."
the other men interrupted together. "Jack Potter's in San Antonio."
"Well, who is he? What's he got to do with this?"
"Oh, he's the town policeman. He goes out and fights Scratchy when he starts acting this way."
A nervous, waiting silence was upon them. The salesman saw that the saloonkeeper, without a sound, had taken a gun from a hiding place. Then he saw the man signal to him, so he moved across the room.
"You better come with me behind this table."
"No, thanks," said the salesman. "I'd rather be where I can get out the back door."
At that, the saloonkeeper made a kindly but forceful motion. The salesman obeyed and found himself seated on a box with his head below the level of the table. The saloonkeeper sat comfortably upon a box nearby.
"You see," he whispered, "Scratchy Wilson is a wonder with a gun, a perfect wonder. And when he gets excited, everyone gets out of his path. He's a terror when he's drunk. When he's not drinking, he's all right. Wouldn't hurt anything. Nicest fella in town. But when he's drunk, be careful."
There were periods of stillness.
"I wish Jack Potter were back from San Antonio," said the saloonkeeper. "He shot Wilson once, in the leg. He'd come in and take care of this thing."
Soon, they heard from a distance the sound of a shot, followed by 3 wild screams. The men looked at each other.
"Here he comes," they said.
A man in a red shirt turned a corner and walked into the middle of the main street of Yellow Sky. In each hand, the man held a long, heavy, blue-black gun. Often he screamed, and these cries rang through the seemingly deserted village. The scream sounded sharply over the roofs with a power that seemed to have no relation to the ordinary strength of a man's voice. These fierce cries rang against walls of silence. The man's face flamed in a hot anger born of whiskey. His eyes, rolling but watchful, hunted the still doorways and windows. He walked with the movement of a midnight cat. As the thoughts came to him, he roared threatening information. The long guns hung from his hands like feathers. They were moved with electric speed. The muscles of his neck straightened and sank as passion moved him. The only sounds were his terrible invitations to battle. The calm houses preserved their dignity at the passing of this small thing in the middle of the street. There was no offer of fight, no offer of fight. The man called to the sky. There were no answers. He screamed and shouted and waved his guns here and everywhere. Finally, the man was at the closed door of the saloon. He went to it and, beating upon it with his gun, demanded drink. The door remained closed. He picked up a bit of paper from the street and nailed it to the frame of the door with a knife. Then he turned his back upon the place and walked to the opposite side of the street. Turning quickly and easily, he fired the guns at the bit of paper. He missed it by half an inch. He cursed at himself and went away. Later, he comfortably shot out all the windows of the house of his best friend. Scratchy was playing with this town. It was a toy for him. But still, there was no offer of fight. The name of Jack Potter, his ancient enemy, entered his mind. He decided that it would be a good thing if he went to Potter's house and, by shooting at it, make him come out and fight. He moved in the direction of his desire, singing some sort of war song. When he arrived at it, Potter's house presented the same still front as had the other homes. Taking a good position, the man screamed an invitation to battle. But this house regarded him as a great stone god might have done. It gave no sign. After a little wait, the man screamed more invitations, mixing them with wonderful curses. After a while came the sight of a man working himself into deepest anger over the stillness of a house. He screamed at it. He shot again and again. He paused only for breath or to reload his guns. Potter and his bride walked rapidly. Sometimes they laughed together, quietly and a little foolishly.
"Next corner, dear," he said finally.
They put forth the efforts of a pair walking against a strong wind. Potter was ready to point the first appearance of the new home. Then, as they turned the corner, they came face to face with the man in the red shirt, who was feverishly loading a large gun. Immediately the man dropped his empty gun to the ground and, like lightning, pulled out another. The second gun was aimed at Potter's chest. There was a silence. Potter couldn't open his mouth. Quickly he loosened his arm from the woman's grasp and dropped the bag to the sand. As for the bride, her face had become the color of an old cloth. She was motionless. The two men faced each other at a distance of 9 feet. Behind the gun, Wilson smiled with a new and quiet cruelty.
"Tried to surprise me," he said. "Tried to surprise me."
His eyes grew more evil. As Potter made a slight movement, the man pushed his gun sharply forward.
"No, don't you do it, Jack Potter. Don't you move a finger toward a gun yet. Don't you move a muscle. The time has come for me to settle with you, and I'm going to do it my own way, slowly, with no interruption. So just listen to what I tell you."
Potter looked at his enemy.
"I haven't got a gun with me, Scratchy," he said. "Honest, I haven't."
He was stiffening and steadying.
but at the back of his mind floated a picture of the beautiful car on the train. He thought of the glory of the wedding, the spirit of his new life. "You know I fight when I have to fight, Scratchy Wilson. But I haven't got a gun with me. You have to do all the shooting yourself." His enemy's face turned pale with anger. He stepped forward and whipped his gun back and forth before Potter's chest.
"Don't you tell me you haven't got a gun with you, you dog! Don't you tell me a lie like that! There isn't a man in Texas who ever saw you without a gun! Don't think I'm a kid!"
His eyes burned with anger and his breath came heavily. "I don't think you're a kid," answered Potter. His feet had not moved an inch backward. "I think you're a complete fool. I tell you I haven't got a gun, and I haven't. If you're going to shoot me, you better begin now. You'll never get a chance like this again." So much enforced reasoning had weakened Wilson's anger. He was calmer.
"If you haven't got a gun, why haven't you got a gun?"
he asked.
"Been to church?"
"I haven't got a gun because I've just come from San Antonio with my wife. I'm married," said Potter. "And if I had thought there'd be a fool like you here when I brought my wife home, I would have had a gun, and don't you forget it."
"Married?"
said Scratchy, not at all understanding.
"Yes, married. I'm married," said Potter clearly. "Married?"
said Scratchy. Seemingly for the first time, he saw the pale, frightened woman at the other side.
"No!"
he said. He was like a creature allowed a glance at another world. He moved a pace backward, and his arm with the gun dropped to his side.
"Is this the lady?"
he asked.
"Yes, this is the lady," answered Potter.
There was another period of silence.
"Well," said Wilson at last, slowly, "I suppose we won't fight now."
"We won't if you say so, Scratchy. You know, I didn't make the trouble."
Potter lifted the bag.
"Well, I guess we won't fight, Jack," said Wilson.
He was looking at the ground.
"Married."
He was not a student of good manners. It was merely that in the presence of this foreign condition he was a simple child of the wildlands. He picked up his fallen gun, and he went away. His feet made deep tracks in the heavy sand.
And that's all the time we have for today. Come back tomorrow for another Learning English program. Christopher Jones Cruz brings you our weekly show, Words and Their Stories. You can learn about American history with our feature, The Making of a Nation. I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.